When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Hey, good evening, good afternoon. Niners rookie minicamp was today. You guys are probably out at the club partying, doing something really fun. But if you're not, if you want to talk about 49ers rookie minicamp on a Friday night, I'm here for you. Because do I have a life? Absolutely not. Not even remotely. So let's talk football. No, let's not talk. Let's talk practice. We're talking about practice today, Niners practice, and not the Niners you've heard of. We're talking rookies and practice squad players. And we're not talking 11-on-11s or pads. We're talking 7-on-7s for 16 plays. That's it. I counted them up. 16 plays of 7-on-7s. That's what we got. So no one should make any definitive takes about anything. We're talking 16 plays. But first impressions, because there were press conferences, interviews. There's more to talk about than just what happened in those 16 plays, but those 16 plays were interesting. So let's get through it. We also need to talk about Nick Sorensen real quick. I'm going to put a banner in right now so I don't forget, because he talked today. So just first impressions. That's all it is. First impressions are important, though. The first round pick, Ricky Pearsall. What does he look like? He looks not short. He looks not short. He doesn't look particularly muscled up. He seems like he moves relatively fluidly. It seems like if you get him a free release, if he's not getting jammed at the line of scrimmage, he can be pretty crafty. He can run. He's a good route runner. He can run double moves. He can get himself open if he can run without being touched for about 10 yards. So if it's zone coverage, if it's off coverage, he could be a problem. He had a play today where it was zone coverage and either there was a busted coverage or the pattern on offense just made him open, but there was no one around him. He just ran a fade route. No one was there. He also had another play. I mean, it was incomplete, but there was another play where he faced Renardo Green, man-to-man. Green lined about 10 yards off him, maybe a little less than 10. And Pearsall was able to get into his stride, ran a stutter go, which I thought was really good. And Green grabbed him about 15 yards downfield. And still, I thought Pearsall got by him. And the pass just didn't go to him. It should have. So he's interesting. But when he was pressed, meaning when he was at the line of scrimmage and a cornerback got in his face right at the line of scrimmage and put their hands on him, he didn't win. He didn't get open. He was ineffective. And I'm not just talking Renardo Green. I'm talking Isaiah Avery and Dan Callis. Two players I'd never heard of. Are they on the practice squad? Were they undrafted free agents, or were they just invitees? So that's a little concerning. And this isn't a new revelation when it comes to Ricky Pearsall. What I saw today shows up on tape. If you give him a free release at the line of scrimmage, he's pretty tough to handle. If you press him, you can lock him up. And that's what I saw. So if you don't believe me, go back and watch the tape yourself. It seems like he cannot replace Ayuk. Brandon Ayuk is the X receiver. He lines up on the line of scrimmage the most. He faces the most press coverage. And he has the quickness, the explosiveness, the strength to win that battle quickly and get into his route. Pearsall does not. And that was the book on him coming out of college. It was on tape. It was confirmed today, at least in the four targets I saw. Of the 16 plays, four went to him, and he caught none of them. So that's okay, right? Like, Kyle Shanahan is great at scheming people open. He does it for Debo. But I thought the reason they were drafting a wide receiver in round one is because they were unable to beat man-to-man coverage, or Debo was unable to beat man-to-man coverage in the Super Bowl. Okay, well, Pearsall can beat off-man coverage, but he doesn't look like a guy who can beat press-man coverage from any position. So Kyle will have to scheme him open, and he can. He can do that. But then when you get the ball in his hands, like, what next? Is he a threat? Is he dynamic with the ball in his hands? No. No. He'll turn up field and fall forward maybe and get all he can, but he's not dynamic. So how could he replace Debo? I don't understand that one. What I saw today isn't a guy who can replace Debo. I don't see that. Debo, you have to scheme him open, but then when you do scheme him open, he could go 50 yards, 70 yards, 90 yards. I didn't see that with Ricky Pearsall. So he didn't, frankly, he didn't look like a first-round pick to me, which is, again, not a shock, right? The Niners didn't even give him a first-round grade. They drafted him in round one, but they didn't give him a first-round grade. He was better, I thought. Like, this is first impression day. So let me compare it to my first impression of Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel, Dante Pettis, the highest drafted wide receivers in the Kyle Shanahan era. Rookie minicamp, Dante Pettis was rough. He ran an in-breaking route, which is what you got to run on the Niners. Those dig routes over the middle, in front of the safeties, behind the linebackers. And he alligator armed a pass. He kind of like jumped for it with one arm. Didn't really commit to it. And to me, that was a deal breaker. I think that did carry over. It was indicative of what he was going to become. Not tough enough for this team. Clear. You got to run digs all day on the 49ers. It's what they do. Those in-breaking routes, off play action. It's what they do. You get the linebackers to play the run, and then you throw the dig behind it. So he ran one of those routes today against, I'm talking he, Pearsall. He ran it against Isaiah Avery, got no separation, ran it from the slot, and the throw was a little high. He wasn't open. So he's built like Dante Pettis for sure. And remember, Dante Pettis was a great route runner. If you give him a free release, he was a problem. He could run double moves. He was a really good route runner. But if you got your hands on him at the line of scrimmage, he was done because he wasn't strong. So Pearsall's built like Pettis. I'm not saying has Pettis' mentality. I can't judge that yet. I don't know. But Debo's first day at rookie minicamp, I remember thinking he's a lot more explosive. He's a lot faster than I realized watching on tape. I always felt that about Debo when he was young, that he was surprisingly fast and that he could win deep. And I remember he played mostly with the second team offense in training camp, but he won a lot. Brandon Ayuk played with the starters all throughout his rookie season because Emmanuel Sanders was gone, and he won instantly. Brandon Ayuk was easy to like immediately. He won. He produced in practice immediately with the starters. It was so obvious that Brandon Ayuk was good, was going to be good. Maybe Ricky Pearsall will be just as good or almost as good, but I couldn't tell today. Is that a fair way to put it? I'm not writing off Ricky Pearsall. I'm not calling him Dante Pettis. There was nothing he did today that I thought was alarming, but he wasn't Debo. He wasn't Ayuk. He didn't look like a first-round pick, and he wasn't the best player in the field. I think that's all fair to say. I don't really see him replacing Debo as a starting flanker for this team. Maybe he will replace Juwan Jennings as the starting slot receiver, but what is Pearsall's 4-4 doing for you there? If you just want a guy to run dig routes and to be tough and to catch and to come down with those passes, wouldn't a guy who's 6'3 with a big catch radius be better suited for that than Ricky Pearsall? Like, he's 6'1 with real short arms. He doesn't give you a big target. That's a dangerous pass over the middle. If you miss it high, it's picked. If you miss it low, it's picked. Like, you want a guy who can go and get the ball. That's Jennings. That's Ayuk. It's not Pearsall. Pearsall looks like, to me, someone they thought could maybe replace Debo. And I don't know. So he's Debo, who's a better route runner, but not as good after the catch. You have to scheme him open, and when you do, he's not going to do much with the... But I thought he was unimpressive. Like, remember, you know how the Chronicle would give movie reviews? Like, the little dude in the chair, the fighter, he'd be, like, jumping out of his seat, clapping, or, like, giving, like, a golf clap, or, like, kind of just sitting back. I would say he was the guy sitting back in his chair, just like, okay. Some people thought he looked really good. I don't see how good you could look getting four targets and catching none of them. So, yeah, that was Ricky Pearsall's first day. Matt McEwen says, and people think he isn't going to struggle against NFL corners. He was going against the rookies. What's he going to look like against Treverius Ward and D'Amador Lenore? Green or Demo at nickel? Let's talk about the star of the day. The star of rookie minicamp, Renardo Green. Renardo Green, first impressions. You see a guy on the field with his peers, in his pads. He looked like he belonged. He looked like not a rookie. How about that? Most of the time, rookies look a little like they're swimming in their pads, like they don't quite have an NFL body. Has an NFL body. He's not short for a corner. He looks 6 feet tall. He's listed at 186, but he doesn't look skinny. And he plays the way he said he would. Calls himself a dog. Well, he wasn't playing off coverage a bunch today. He played a little, and he wasn't as good at that, frankly. But when he played press man-to-man coverage, he was really good. He was very aggressive. He used his hands. He looked like a vet playing press man-to-man coverage. He wasn't getting in the wide receiver's face and then leaving his hands down and trying to mirror him with his feet. No, he was using his hands, which I don't even know if that's legal in rookie. I'm not trying to snitch, but I wasn't expecting to see that. I don't think you're allowed to do that. I don't think you're supposed to. Whatever. I don't care. That's their problem. But he did it, and he was good at it. So what are they going to do with him? Today he played left cornerback. That's the number one corner. That's Treverius Ward, which makes sense. It's rookie minicamp. He's the second round pick. He should be there. Nick Sorensen also talked today and said that they're going to start Green, as in start, not like he's a starter, but he's going to start his career in the slot, which my first reaction was, I don't like that. It's such a Niner thing to do, to draft a guy and move his position immediately. I know he played some slot in college, but the last 2 years he was on the outside. Why don't you let him play outside to get his feet wet, to get his confidence up, and then move him inside? I mean, that's what you did with Lenore. But watching him play, I think his best position is going to be in the slot too. Maybe not at first, but when it's all said and done, I think he's going to be the slot receiver, for the slot corner for this team. And I don't think they're going to re-sign Lenore. I don't think they want to spend big money on, maybe they'll re-sign Lenore. But to me, this feels like a Lenore replacement next year. Because, okay, so he's a press man-to-man corner. He's at his best, playing right face-to-face with the wide receiver, getting his hands on him, and then trailing the rest of the play. He doesn't run a 4-3, though. So if you try that against some premium wide receivers, he might get burned. That's why corners get drafted so high. I mean, if you have the ability to play press man-to-man coverage against Brandon Ayuk, Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, you're going to go, you're going to be a first-round pick. This guy was a late second-round pick. He ran a 4-4, what, 9? It's fast. 4-4-7, that's fast. But not as fast as a lot of wide receivers that he might have to man up against. In the slot, you don't often face that kind of speed. So maybe he'd be better suited to play in the slot and play press from there. Because when I saw him play off coverage, He didn't look as confident. I don't know if he has the speed to play press against true speed on the outside, and if he plays off to give himself a little bit of an itch, he looks like he could get flagged. I don't know. Maybe in a couple of years he'll refine his technique and he won't be so handsy. But I could see why coaches look at his film and his skill set and think he'll have the most successful. I'm gonna try that in English. He'll be most successful in the slot. I can see that. And if he's a good slot corner, great. I mean, the Chiefs drafted Trent McDuffie in round one, put him in the slot, and he was one of their MVPs in the Super Bowl. So seems like what the Niners could do is keep Lenore outside and put Green in at the nickel. I just don't think they'll do that. I think this is Kyle's team. We have to remember that. Kyle is the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator. We don't realize that. He is the defensive coordinator, the head coach, and the general manager. And considering how much Jed freaking loves him, he might as well be the owner too. He is the emperor of the 49ers. And what the emperor wants is rookies not to play unless they absolutely have to. So I'm thinking the vision, Kyle's vision, because it doesn't matter what happens in real life. Kyle knows better. He sees. I think he's going to have Green be the backup nickel. Remember who's the backup nickel last year? Isaiah Oliver. Well, he's gone. So now Renardo Green's the backup nickel. And the vision is to have Isaac Yiadom start in the nickel outside. That's what I think. I could be wrong. Tell me I'm wrong, though. It's Kyle. He is the defensive coordinator. Was that not apparent watching Nick Sorensen talk today? Matt McEwen says, Niners logic. What position were you in college? Athlete. I was a cheerleader. Niners logic. Perfect. We see you as a right guard. Whatever they do, you got to move them. Okay. Dominic Pooney. So first impression of Dominic Pooney, he didn't do any team drills. So I don't know where they plan on playing him. On the right side, on the left side, at guard, at center, attack. I don't know. Don't know. But there was an interview. He did a press conference. And he was delightful. He was the quintessential offensive lineman. So I'm just going to talk to you from a journalist perspective. Journalists are thinking, who's a good quote? Not like, is he a cool guy? Do I like him? Do I approve of him? Is he a good person? I don't know. Is he a good quote? Can I go to this guy during the week after a win, after a loss? Will he give me something? And I'm in the brotherhood. We're always banking on the offensive linemen because they're usually the best quotes. They're usually the easiest to approach, the ones with the most context, the ones who are the smartest. I mean, everything. They're just the best, usually. So when a new offensive lineman gets drafted, we're looking like, what's this guy going to bring to the table? As a quote, A+. The guy is smart, perceptive, reflective, sensitive. Maybe that's not the wrong word to use for a football player, but he was aware of what the questioners wanted, and he was eager to give it to him. I mean, if he ends up being, I want him to be a good player, put it that way. He's just too good of a quote. He's got personality. Really pulling for the guy. Now, he did seem a little surprised that he got drafted. Well, that his stock rose so much. He didn't seem like he saw this coming for himself a few years ago. And I think that was a theme for a lot of the Niners. Like, happy to be here. Like, wow, you know, just a couple of years ago, I thought I might not get drafted. But hey, look how it all worked out. Now I'm a mid-round pick on the 49ers. Like, there is a lot of that energy. And Pooney, like, that's the one knock I'd give him. He seemed awfully happy to be here. Now, maybe he's just an offensive lineman. Offensive linemen don't necessarily have an edge all the time. Joe Staley didn't have an edge. Trent Williams doesn't really. Anthony Davis did, for sure. Mike Iupati didn't have an edge. Alex Boone did. God, he was a jerk. Shout out to Alex Boone. Pooney didn't. He's a guy who started off at a small school, transferred, played 5 years in college. I think a lot of these guys, when they were in their third year, Pooney, Pearsall, weren't thinking they were going to be day one, day two picks. They were thinking, I might not get drafted. And then they get drafted high on a team that has had so much success. There was a lot of like, gee golly, this is great. Dominic Pooney had a little gee golly, which is fine. It's the first day. I'm not even really taking note of that. I am. The one player on this team in this rookie class who has a real edge. Like, when I say edge, the kind of guy who's not smiling a bunch, the kind of guy who seems like he's been doing these NFL press conferences for a while. Like he's cordial and helpful, but not too helpful. Like he's a pro. Renardo Green. Renardo Green's like 23 and he stands there like he's 30. He's respectful, but he's not if like too. It just seems polished. He seems polished and kind of surly. Like, kind of reminds me of Brandon Ayuk. Like, there's nothing to play about. There's nothing to play about right now. We're talking football, and these questions aren't that great. So, you know, which they're not. How excited are you? On a scale of 1 to 10, give me your excitement level. We set him up for these bags. So, I like Green. I've met some players from Florida State. They always seem to have like an edge to them. I don't know why. He's one of them. I like him. Dominic Pooney, small school guy in a big town. Just happy to be here. I'm really pulling for him. Smart. Seems like he comes from a really nice family. I don't know why I said that. It just seems like he has a healthy self-esteem. David Baker. Did you get that new computer? Seems to be working well. No. I'm going to get it next week. I want to get the MacBook Pro. Enough is enough. Enough is enough. But today's working all right. I'm going to go through each rookie. Malik Mustafa, another player who has a bit of an edge. I would say he actually does have that. Him and Renardo Green both have an edge. So I like that about him. But I'm going to say why I'm going to reserve judgment for a long time with him. I have a tough time. I'm just going to put it this way. I'm going to be completely transparent. I have a tough time evaluating safeties in practice. Any safeties. That might be the toughest position of all. Because there's no tackling. So much of what a safety has to do is how quickly do you swarm to the ball? How hard do you hit? Do you wrap up? So, like, you don't see any of that. You don't see if he makes plays in the backfield. You don't see if he can. I mean, they make so few plays on the ball. They're not often in man-to-man coverage. Hard to tell. You often don't even notice them. So keep that in mind when people talk about safeties in practice. Do they really know what they're talking about? Like, a lot of people thought Tarvarius Moore was a good safety, me included. Because you know why? He was good in practice. He'd make plays in the ball. He would often intercept Jimmy Garoppolo. In retrospect, who didn't? Sorry. Then you play a real game, and it's like, oh, he can't tackle anyone. He takes ridiculous angles to the ball. He can't play. In practice, he looked like a playmaker. People used to say, me included, start this guy over Jimmy Ward. So, hard to judge a safety, which you can do in training camp when they do the one-on-one stuff. That's in August. You see how he does covering a tight end one-on-one. But like even that can be kind of deceptive because the Niners don't put their safeties in man-to-man coverage that much anyway. And Talanoa Hufanga wouldn't necessarily look that good in that drill, but he makes plays. Against the pass, against the run, in the backfield, on the back end of the defense. He makes plays all over the field. You can't really see that in practice. So that's my disclaimer for him. Let's talk Isaac Garendo. Kyle Shanahan has his ego in two picks this year, big time. Ricky Pearsall, No one else would have made that pick in round one. It was Kyle Pitt and Isaac Garendo, the running back he traded up for. He did it again. He fell in love with a running back that other teams wouldn't necessarily have taken that high and traded up for him. Every time he's traded up for a running back, it hasn't worked out. Joe Williams, Trey Sermon. Third time's a charm. Again, it was 7-on-7, so no actual handoffs. They targeted him 4 times. So, you know, Kyle's sensitive about these picks. Everyone's saying, why did you take Pearsall? Why did you trade up for Isaac Garendo? He started 1 game in college. What were you thinking? He ran a 4-3, and you traded up for him? Well, get ready for Garendo to get the ball a million times this offseason. Because Kyle wants to be right. There's one thing I know about Kyle is he wants to be right. He's not going to concede this quickly. So wait for Garendo to get a bunch of targets. He got 4 today. He caught 3 of them. That's great. He dropped one. It was a screen. There was no one around. That wasn't great. But he caught 3 or 4 targets. So that's nice. Could I tell that he ran a 4-3? No. But maybe, I mean, he's a track champ, so I imagine he can. I mean, he did it, so I know that he can. But does he look like that on field? I don't know. I didn't see that. Another thing about Isaac Garendo, I was talking about the golly gee, oh whiz. It's so amazing to be here. Garendo. Almost more than anyone. I mean, Garendo's story is incredible. Like, he played wide receiver in high school, went to Wisconsin, switched to running back so he could get on the field, but barely played, and then transferred to Louisville, where he had a decent season but didn't start. And he's talking like, you know, it wasn't long ago where I didn't think I was going to get drafted. And now he's getting force-fed the ball in Niners rookie minicamp because they traded up to take him in round 4. It's just life comes at you so fast. I don't know. When I hear a rookie say, boy, this is amazing. I didn't really expect to be here. Sometimes it hasn't really sunk in yet. I got to pinch myself. I'm thinking, a lot of guys who didn't make it have said that. To me, the guys who make it are the ones who are like unfazed by it. Like, I'm supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be here. Frankly, I'm pissed I didn't go higher. Like, how many players have we seen with that attitude? Renardo Green has that attitude. Supposed to be here. Should have been picked. Frank Gore had that attitude. Isaac Garendo's like, boy, round 4? That's nice. And he was talking like, you know, I'm actually better suited to be a backup on this team because I've been a backup my whole life. These other running backs are used to start, and I'm used to being a backup. Like, okay. But again, no handoffs, 4 targets, 3 catches, 1 drop. I don't know. Maybe it'll be money. Let's do some sleeper picks, and then we'll get back to training camp. Nick Sorensen. Might even talk a little bit about Brock Purdy, too. But first, there's a game tonight, 6:30. Denver, Minnesota. Can I show you guys what happened? So on Wednesday night, Jesse and I made some picks. We lost. Almost won my third time. But we got them. We were so close. We just picked against. We went under. Less on 4 players on points. Mitchell, Doncic, Tatum, and Shai Gilgeous. Problem is, I didn't press points on Shai Gilgeous. I just pressed the wrong button. Had it been points, we would have won. That's what really hurts the most. Because if you look at points, we picked the less, and he was underneath 29.5. That hurts. We really should have won. I just fat-fingered it. Sorry. But that's an expression. That's what I did. So I'm gonna do that again. I like picking, just being a hater. But I'm going to try to win by being a hater. It's called the hater strategy, the hater tactic, the hater approach. Jokic. Where you at, buddy? Assists, points. Where's just the points? Okay, Jamal Murray, points, 19.5. Well, I don't like that. Or do I? Let's see. Jamal Murray, 19.5 points. Hit 8 in the last game? Yeah, less. Thank you. Anthony Edwards, 29.5 points. Less? definitely saying less because I'm a hater. Carl Anthony Towns, 20 and a half points. Yikes. Someone's going to have to score, right? Not him. Less. Okay. And, jeez. Okay, Michael Porter. Where are they hiding the points for these players on the... Caldwell Pope. 7.5 points. Oh, yeah, less. For sure. I like that. I'm only picking less from now on. I'm too optimistic. A lot of people are picking less, though. Maybe I should pick more. I'm going to stick to this. Be relentlessly negative, and it'll pay off. And look at my career, right? Yep. Let's put it in. No diddy. Cool. It's nice to have action. If you want some action, use promo code. Download the Sleeper app. Use promo code CONE, C-O-H-N, and get a deposit match up to $500 on your first deposit. How about that? Okay. Next. Hold on. I got to put in more banners so I don't forget what I want to talk about later. Because I think we need it. We haven't talked about Brock Purdy in a day. We need to talk about him again. Okay. Jacob Cowing. Jacob Cowing got 3 targets, and he caught one of them. Not 2. I'm going to give him 2. I don't know why I said 1. He got the second target of practice. It was a quick out route to the right. He caught it for a gain of 5. And then 4 plays later, he ran a deep out route. Well, just a standard out route for about 10 yards and caught it. And that was his day. He later ran a dig route over the middle. This is the one. That's kind of how I judge how successful a wide receiver is going to be with the Niners. Can you catch that pass? Pettis didn't want the smoke, so you're out. Ayuk loves it, embraces the smoke. So does Jennings. So they're good. Cowing ran the route, but the pass got tipped by a linebacker and almost intercepted by a safety, so it wasn't his fault. I just can't tell. We'll have to see. Did listen to his press conference. I was there today. He is 5'8", which is fine. It's fine. He does seem faster than Pearsall. There was one play I was watching. He was in the slot. I'm talking Cowing. He got pressed, but he beat it and was streaking up the seam open, and he didn't get the pass. So he might be good, but he also kind of struck me as a guy who's really nice. All the players in the Niners are so nice. Now, Debo and Ayuk aren't really. They can be charming. Not Ayuk. Sorry, Brandon. Debo can be very charming. Ayuk, not so much. They also can be pretty prickly, which is kind of comes with the territory of being a really, really good wide receiver. Cowing, I mean, maybe eventually. But... it just struck me how nice all the players were. Maybe I'm older, but I really liked Green and Mustafa because they acted like it was nothing. Been doing this. It was they've been expecting it for a long time. Cowing's like, I don't know. Maybe it's because he's 5'8". It's hard to take a young man seriously. He's smaller than you. Sorry. Like, is he a dog? I don't know. That's how you judge players, right? Is he a dog? No, no, no. He seemed like he was well coached, though. Jed Fish, wasn't he Harbaugh's offensive coordinator at Michigan for a minute? I think he was. So I don't really have anything definitive to say about Jacob Cowing. He caught a couple of passes in the flat. I want to see, like, at his size, is he going to be a deep threat? He runs a 4.3. So I'd like to see, can he get open deep and catch the ball? Because how good is he going to be? Do you really want to even target him running a dig? Like, he's so small. They tried it today, and the pass almost got intercepted. It's a small target running across the middle with a bunch of potential interceptors around. I wouldn't really want him running that dig route, honestly, unless he's wide freaking open. So I'm curious to see how is he going to fit in this offense? You don't throw deep very much. It's very much a short intermediate passing game. He runs a 4-3. You never found a way to use Danny Gray. What's the plan for Jacob Cowing? I'm open-minded, though. I just want to see him be a dog. Brother Bob, Jesse Naylor is afraid to bet me, damn it. Sup, GC? I'm afraid to bet you, too. Sup, Brother Bob? Grant, does Jacob Cowing look explosive? Yeah, I would say he does. He does. Pearsall, not as explosive. Matt McEwen says, I hope Jacob Cowing isn't another Tavon Austin. I wouldn't he doesn't seem like a gadget player. He doesn't. Okay. Tanner Mordecai. I want to be careful here because I could say I'm not impressed by Tanner Mordecai, but I wasn't impressed by Brock Purdy, right? That's on the record. So what did Tanner Mordecai do that was potentially nice? I'll just go through his throws. First pass, quick out to Mason Plyne in the right flat for 5 yards. Quick, decisive, accurate. Next throw, quick out to Jacob Cowing, out right flat, 5 yards. Quick, decisive, gets the ball out of his hands. Next play, a quick throw to Cody Schrager in the right flat for 5 yards. Pass. Quick, decisive, accurate. Next pass, throws the ball away while Pearsall's running a stutter go past Renardo Green. Might have been open. But, hey, made a decision, threw the ball away, whatever. 7-on-7, though. Like, why are you throwing the ball away? But whatever. Next one. He's got Pearsall open deep up the left side against zone, overthrows it. Flat trajectory. He's wide open. Next play. Throws to Garendo in the left flat. Excuse me, the right flat for a gain of 5. Next play. Throws. Throws to Pearsall on the left, who drops the ball. That was a drop for Pearsall. It looked like a slant was being covered by Dan Callis. So tried to fit that one in. I mean, so far he's completed out routes, quick outs, and swing routes. I mean, swings and outs. Cool. Like flare, not even an out. Like an out's a 12-yard route. I'm talking like little flare routes to the flat. Tried to throw the slant. That got broken up. Comes back to Garendo. Throws a little Texas route over the middle for 5 yards. That's over the middle. That's nice. Then comes back to 48. Who the hell is 48? I don't even know. For a check down over the middle. Like a tight end. And that's his day. That was it for Tanner Mordecai. Being able to hit those quick short throws is important in this offense, obviously. You need to be able to hit that intermediate throw over the middle. Brock does it. Jimmy did it. If you can't hit that, you can't play quarterback for this team. So we'll see if Tanner can hit the 10 to 15 yard throw over the middle. He didn't today. He didn't really try many. Any. So he's a little bit of a longer release than Purdy. He's a stronger arm than Purdy. He has a flat deep ball. Supposed to run a 4-3, but I mean a 4-5. But you don't scramble in 7-on-7 because there's no pass rush. So, at least he was quick and decisive with the ball. I mean, sometimes you see a quarterback that literally doesn't know what they're doing or where to go. He knew where to go with the ball. He threw the ball away one time when he should have went deep, frankly. And I don't know what to think. Did anyone else like him? Were people enamored? I was not. Minus Brock, this draft can't be worse than 2022. Feel it. Brother Really Kyle Bob says, GC, your internet seems good. Any UDFAs look good? Yeah, let's not jinx it. But I did get a new Xfinity router that's more powerful, so hopefully that should help. Any UDFAs look good? I'm curious about Cody Schrader, the running back. He caught a swing pass. I don't know. I thought he's interesting, but like, so Mason Plyne, the tight end, and Cody Schrader each caught a pass. Mason Plyne caught the first pass of practice. Schrader caught the third one. They're interesting, those two. They have some potential. Other than them, I wasn't super impressed with Tanner Mordecai, and the other guys are like linemen, so I don't know. Nick Sorensen had his first press conference as the 49ers defensive coordinator today. What did you think of Nick Sorensen? I thought he was kind of, I don't know. I don't want to be mean or rude. It's kind of boring. He worked hard not to answer questions specifically. He didn't have a lot of energy. He didn't have a lot of personality. He seemed like he was standing there trying to figure out how to say nothing. Was that your impression? He did have some insight when asked about Brandon Staley. He was pretty transparent and said he's holistically was the word he used multiple times. He's helping holistically, which means like with everything. So in terms of picking personnel, building the scheme, evolving it, and building game plans. So it sounds like it's partially his defense that they're like co-owners of it or something. I mean, they could call Nick Sorensen the defensive coordinator, but the other guy's collaborating with everything, and he has experience, unlike Nick. And wouldn't that be weird if you got a promotion to a job that you'd never done before, and you're feeling a little insecure because you've never done the job before, and they bring in another guy who isn't your boss? Technically, you're not even his boss because he's the assistant head coach. So who's the boss? Right? Isn't the assistant head coach above the defensive coordinator? You tell me. That's awkward. So it sounds like, Sorensen is essentially the mouthpiece for Brandon Staley. He'll be on the sideline. He can talk to the players. He can look them in the eye. He can lead the meetings. But the brains of the operation is Staley. He's picking the players. He's building the game plans. He's thinking of, I mean, how can Nick Sorensen evolve the defense when this is the only scheme he's ever known? He comes from Seattle. He knows one scheme. Brandon Staley doesn't come from Seattle. He's a Vic Fangio disciple. The Niners want to evolve on defense. Sorensen can't help him in that pursuit. All he can do is ask Staley what he thinks and then say, I like this idea, I don't like this idea. He can sort of curate Staley's ideas, but it seems to me that he has none of his own about how to change the defense. I asked him today, I said, for so long, your defense has sort of been known for that straightforward four-man pass rush with your defensive linemen. Are you going to try to maybe jazz that up a little bit this year, like scheme up some other pressures? And he says, you know, you're always trying to evolve, but that's going to be our bread and butter. Are you sure about that, Nick? Have you talked to Brandon? You might want to talk to Brandon Staley about that. I think Brandon Staley has different ideas that maybe he hasn't expressed to you just yet. Because why do you think Brandon Staley wanted to sign Leonard Floyd, dude? Anyway, it was kind of hard to take Nick Sorensen seriously. Like, he needed a haircut. He needed a shave. He's wearing a hat. The hat was pulled low. You couldn't really see his eyes. Like, all that's bad. Come on, man. This is your first impression. Look ready to go. Would Robert Saleh come out shaggy with a beard and a hat? Absolutely not. Would D'Amico Ryans? Absolutely not. You know why? Because those guys had head coach aspirations. Immediately. When they stood in front of the media, they saw themselves as head coaches and acted like it. Nick Sorensen, another one of these guys that acts like, wow, this is amazing. How did I get here? This is great. I'm just going to be myself. Okay. So my first impression of Nick Sorensen is that he's not the defensive coordinator of this team. And then you think, well, who is the defensive coordinator? Is it Brandon Staley? It's Kyle Shanahan. It's Kyle Shanahan. Whatever he wants, he gets. He's a control freak. He has his hand in everything in the organization. Everything. Including the defense. So, Sorensen, Staley, it's Kyle. He'll delegate to those two as long as he trusts them, which could be a couple more months. As soon as he lost trust in Steve Wilks, it was all Kyle. I don't know. Were you guys impressed with Nick Sorensen's answers or his presentation? He seemed like very low energy. That's another thing. Someone asked him, like, well, what's your style going to be on the sideline when you're coaching? Are you going to be like Sala and D'Amico? That's a fair question. Because everyone knows what you're talking about when you say that. Are you going to have high energy? Steve Wilks didn't. And Sorensen gave this like deer in the headlights looks and was like, I don't know. I haven't coached yet. Yeah, we know. I don't know. It seems like Kyle Shanahan is this dour Bill Belichick-esque coach who just got run out of New England and isn't a coach anymore because players don't like him. And he's so negative. But it seemed like Kyle was balanced well by Sala and D'Amico, guys who were just the exact opposite. They bring energy to the team. Kyle's like an energy vampire. He's so negative and dour and reserved. Sala and D'Amico breathe life into their team and their defenses. And I thought Kyle understood and had the self-awareness to know that he needed that type of a coordinator. And then he hired Steve Wilks, who's not like that. And now he's hired Nick Sorensen, who I just met for the first time, who's more low-key than Steve. Steve Wilks had like a, he's older. He almost had like a seething anger. Like he had an edge to him. He wasn't super positive and upbeat like Sala and D'Amico, but he had this like, don't mess with me edge, which I respected. Sorensen just has this kind of like, hey, I'm a cool guy. I'm a nice guy. I'm basically a position coach who I don't know. He just didn't seem to have much of a presence. Wilks had more presence than him. Didn't think it was super impressive. But what do I know? Patrick, so many viewers barely likes. Let's support Grant. Yeah, like the stream. Who is, if you haven't liked the stream right now, raise your hand. You're out. You can't watch the show anymore. You're not allowed. Everyone that hasn't liked the stream, go away. You're not my friend anymore. We're no longer friends. Yeah, that's right. That's how I do. I base my friends on who likes my YouTube streams. I go in, I look in after, and I said, that's my friend. That person is now, we're friends. If I see them on the street, I will know them, and I will say, thank you, sir or ma'am, for liking my stream. Let's talk Brock Purdy. I know he didn't practice today. I have a question for you guys. How many teams, let's say the Niners decided today that they don't want to pay Brock Purdy $55 million a year. How many teams would want to trade for him if he were available? Because trading for him involves giving up a first-round pick, right? And paying him a hell of a lot of money in the future. Who wants to do that? What team? Not the Bears, right? They just drafted a quarterback. Not the Vikings. They just drafted a quarterback. Not the Packers. They have their quarterback. Would the Lions do it? They already have a quarterback. Like, what team would just completely scrap their quarterback room, guy they drafted, guy they paid, so they could trade for Brock and pay him? Okay, that's just a rhetorical question. Here's another way to look at Brock. Brock's a lot of fun to watch. Brock is objectively better than Jimmy Garoppolo just based on the eye test alone. Harder worker, more mobile. So the eye test favors Brock, although the eye test also shows you that he doesn't have a strong arm. And he's kind of small. But what doesn't really serve Brock at all are his stats. And I know that sounds stupid, like his stats are great. Uh-huh. So are Jimmy's. The basic stats, the advanced stats, the EPA, the blah, 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 blah. Jimmy had it all. You know he did. This is what a lot of Niner fans and most Brock Purdy fans like won't talk about. Jimmy Garoppolo. His numbers were incredible. His win-loss record was just as good, if not better than Brock's this early in their career. Jimmy was like 18-3 after 21 starts. Brock 17-4. Jimmy had great numbers too. It's just that Jimmy didn't have McCaffrey. He played with McCaffrey for like a month. Brock plays on an objectively better team. Now, he's better than Jimmy. But the question is, how much? Because Jimmy isn't even a top 30 quarterback in the NFL. Not a top 32 quarterback in the NFL. For a time, I'm thinking 2019 when he was riding the Niners' coattails to a Super Bowl. Did I phrase that well? A lot of people, a lot of Niner fans thought he was a top 10 quarterback in the league. A lot of people said he was better than Kirk Cousins. He's not. I know one person on the beat who's a big fan of Microsoft Excel who would frequently tweet about how much better Jimmy Garoppolo was than Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers. That all happened. And there were stats and numbers to back it up. Any stats you wanted. Advanced stat, regular stat, win-loss. It all showed that Jimmy was great. But he wasn't. All he had to do was look. And then he went to the Raiders. And he didn't just, like, disappoint. He crashed and burned. He got benched quickly and jettisoned. And now he's a backup on a team that isn't giving him an opportunity to compete for the job. He's just a backup. He could be out of the league in a year or two if he loses interest. That happened fast. I'm not saying Brock's on that level. He's clearly better than Jimmy. But how much? Is Brock really a top 10 quarterback? Really? Is he really better than Jordan Love? You're telling me if you put Jordan Love on the 49ers, his numbers wouldn't drastically improve? Any quarterback's numbers on the Niners would drastically improve. You know why? Because the system is so quarterback friendly. Kyle doesn't ask his quarterbacks to do anything difficult. Nothing. All the throws are short. All the throws are open. All the players are really good who catch the ball, and they get yards after the catch. All you have to do is avoid a few sacks and get the ball out semi-quickly and execute. And you'll put up great numbers. So I don't think Brock's numbers are... you got to trust your eyes. What would Brock do on the Raiders? If you just took him off the Niners and put him on the Raiders, would he be winning? Would his numbers be good? Would he be a Pro Bowler? No! So is he worth $55 million a year? No! He's not. And I'm going to tell you something. Once the Niners give him that contract, that's the beginning of the end of this dynasty. They're not even a dynasty. But once they give him that contract, that's the beginning of the end of this run. You can't give that kind of a contract to a player who's arguably top 20 in the league at quarterback. Arguably. You're telling me if you put Baker Mayfield on the Niners, he wouldn't light it up? He would. He absolutely would. You know who else would? Geno Smith would light it up on the Niners. Dak Prescott would light it up on the Niners. You know they would. You know in your little hearts that they would. You may have a big heart. I'm the one with the little heart. Other quarterbacks who would light it the hell up on the 49ers. Let me think. Kyler. My God. Can you imagine Kyler Murray on the 49ers? Stafford. Gardner Minshew. Imagine Gardner Minshew on the 49ers. He would light it the hell up, and he's not good. Just keep that in mind. Yeah, Brock Purdy's better than Gardner Minshew. But how much? We'll find out this year. I think. Did I upset you with that little tirade? I may have. I'm sorry. I take it back. I don't. I'm standing by it. I'm standing on business this time around. Brother Bob says, how long before Staley is on the sidelines calling plays? I give it by the bye week. Over under the bye week. Niners rule. Grant, you started the show talking about being in the club. It looks like you're about to hit the club, or is it just me? Hey, I don't know. How's it go? What is love? That's what I'm going for. The Chris Kattan look. Joshua Tints? NBA says Jimmy got paid. Brock deserves it more, period. Okay. Cool. Brock will get paid. Do you think paying Jimmy was a good idea? Brother Bob says, Microsoft Excel and EPA fan. Haha, you wild, bro. So I had to do it. I had to do it. That happened. People really forget the Jimmy Garoppolo era. It was wild. It lasted a long time. It wasn't that long ago. And a lot of people, unironically, said he was an elite quarterback. And used stats to prove it. And wrote long pieces about it. Better than Aaron Rodgers. More yards per... Better EPA. Uh-huh. So don't use those numbers. Don't use any of that to argue that Brock Purdy's better than Justin Herbert or Jordan Love. Like, no. No. Absolutely not. He's better than Jimmy Garoppolo. I'll go that far. For sure, better than Jimmy Garoppolo. All right, I'm done. About 6 o'clock. Did a full hour. On the way to work today, I was listening to my Spotify. And it's 2024. So I like kind of putting myself in like 1995 mode, like 30 years ago, and just pretending. And I was thinking, like, what's the best album from 1995? And I don't know. There's a lot of good ones. But the one I listened to today, and I always go to it when it's warm in California for the first time, is Safe and Sound by DJ Quick. It's just phenomenal. There's no album that really makes, like, caps, that gives you that riding around with your top down in California on a sunny day more than that album. And I think there is no more complete artist in hip hop history than DJ Quick. So I had a really good time listening to Safe and Sound today. He made the album in 95. It sounds like it was made yesterday. The mixing is impeccable. The production is great. He did all of it himself. And the rapping's great. And, like, there's very few features on it. It's just him talking about being a player. Like, who can't relate to that? Anyway, I really enjoyed that. I would highly recommend it. Safe and Sound, DJ Quick, 1995. Then his next album, even better. Even better. Rhythmalism, 1998, DJ Quick. But that to me is more like pouring a bubble bath. You know, it's like the grown and gorgeous, luxurious music. He's a little younger on Safe and Sound. That's more like, oh, let's take out the drop top. It's 75 degrees. It's May. It just stopped raining. Different vibes. Different vibes. But who's a more complete artist than DJ Quick? Don't say Dr. Dre. Don't say Dr. Dre. Because he didn't even write his own raps. And as a rapper, he couldn't really hold his own in a song without someone else to balance him out. You know why? He had no personality. He's very serious. He always needed Ice Cube or Eazy-E or Snoop or Eminem or anyone else, Tupac, to, like, put personality on the song. And then he could be like the straight man who was hard. DJ Quick over Dr. Dre all day. All day. Does no one else feel me on this? Am I too old? Is this too DJ Quick? No? Okay. I'm not a big Kendrick Lamar fan. Can I say that? Like, I don't listen to Drake at all, and I do have a Kendrick Lamar playlist on Spotify. It has 8 songs on it. Some people act like Kendrick Lamar is the greatest rapper of all time. No, absolutely not. First of all, his voice is not good. He sounds like Bart Simpson. It's very nasally. I think the voice is extremely important. You're not even singing. I have to like your voice. I don't like his voice. I don't like Drake's voice either. Basically, it's their voices. I don't like them. I don't like Drake's entire persona. It's just awful. There's nothing rap about it. It's an NSYNC persona. That's what I have to say about Drake. He's Justin Timberlake invading rap, which is whatever. But Kendrick is like the pretentious persona. Like, you know, I make real hip hop and I only talk about... It's like, eh. DJ Quick's a lot more fun than Kendrick, I'd have to say. And Kendrick doesn't do songs. Did Kendrick ever do a song with DJ Quick? The Game did. Problem did. I kind of judge rappers on who they will do songs with. You know, like Andre 3000, a lot of people thought he was a better rapper than Big Boy. He was pretentious. He was great, but Big Boy made songs with Slick Rick. Did Andre do that? No, he did not. the game is a bum? Yeah. He's good taste, though. He's made some good music. I like the game. I like the game. Can I say that? I like the game. Is that against the rules? Game ruined. Yeah, game's a joke, but he made some good songs. All right. Yeah, that's true. He had a fake persona too. But he made songs with DJ Quick. I like that. If DJ Quick co-signs you, I'm in. I mean, DJ Quick discovered and put Suge Free on. Like, that's it. That's all you need to know. Who else would have done that? Not Dr. Dre. Rap isn't real, grow up, dorks. No, it is real. It's as real as professional wrestling, which is why I like it. It's a lot of posturing. It's a lot of ridiculous bravado. It's what I need. Is there not a little, or the, at least there was when I was a kid. Now you got people like Drake. Drake couldn't have been a... See, that's why another thing I don't like about Drake. I feel like good rappers could also double as professional wrestlers. Like Tupac would have been an incredible professional wrestler. Can you imagine Tupac in WWF? He would have been larger than life. Biggie in WWF, that would have been incredible. Like, those would have been legitimate rap battles. But Drake in the WWE? Like, no, everyone would want to watch you get hit with a chair. Sorry. You're too sensitive. I don't hate mainstream. I just hate some of it. I'm not like one of these real hip-hop pure. Like, no. But I think the zeitgeist is wrong 80% of the time. Okay, I'm done. Thank you for watching. I'll see you when I see you. That was Rookie Minicamp. Next week is OTAs. Hold on. There's more. Yes, some Homer stan said Brock is better than Herbert. People are entitled to their opinions, and maybe I'm wrong here. But I don't think I am. RZA. It's a good one. It's a good one. I'd have to say that DJ Quick made far superior solo music to RZA. RZA, great producer, could rap a little bit. But the list of great solo DJ Quick songs is very long, and the list of great solo RZA songs isn't. No disrespect to the Wu-Tang Clan. Sorry. 7MP says, is that watermelon and mucho mango Arizonas on your counter? No. That is, hold on, that's a good guess. That's Metamucil, that's the orange. And the smaller ones are, the one is a watermelon magnesium gummies. I freaking love magnesium gummies. It's like being able to eat candy before you go to bed. Oh, this is good for me? Let me take four so I can really sleep. But really, I'm just getting it for the little bit of sugar that I deprive myself of. And then I have vitamin C too, just to be healthy. Just because I'm 36, you gotta be careful. You know, you got to stay on top of it. Vitamin C, immune system support. It's important. As you can see, I'm the kind of person that plans ahead, you know, covers his bases, doesn't fly by the seat of his pants. No. I got fiber supplement right there for regularity and a lighter feeling. Just a lighter feeling. Aren't Metamucil commercials really funny? You have people jumping around and stuff. It's like, What did you do 15 minutes ago? I know what you did. Anyway, thanks for watching. Go take some Metamucil. It's good for you. Regularity. Take care.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.